We're in Luke chapter 15. Luke chapter 15, we'll be finishing up this chapter this morning. Got through this whole chapter in just two sermons. That's a little different. Covering a lot of verses this morning. Luke chapter 15, we're going to be looking at verses 11 through 32. In this chapter, there are three parables that are given. And John McCarty covered the first two last Sunday, the parable of the lost sheep and the parable of the lost coin. And the point that each parable makes is the same. It's the same with the sheep, it's the same with the coin, and it's the same with our text today, the lost son or the prodigal son. Last week, John pointed out the sheep get lost as a result of their own, I'm not sure the right word to use, maybe their nature would be the right word, their incompetence. They're able to stay found, to stay in one place. They wander off without giving it a thought. That's apparently the way sheep do. The coin was lost not because of any fault of its own, a coin just a coin, but somebody misplaced it. And that's how the coin came to be lost. I don't know if you do that kind of stuff around your house or not, but regularly I tend to lose things. And eventually I'll find them right where I left them. And sometimes I'm sure they move themselves. And occasionally Susan has intentionally moved something to mess with my head, and that happens occasionally. But the coin is, what did you say, Steve? It does. But the point of the coin and the sheep, Jesus tells us what the point of the parable is. Because at the end of each of those parables, he said, I tell you that there's rejoicing in heaven over one sinner who repents and is saved. And that's the point. One sheep is lost. He left the 99 or whatever the case may be and went and searched for the one. And when the one was found, there was great rejoicing. The coin must have been a valuable coin. And when it was found, there was great rejoicing. And now we turn to our text for today, verses 11 through 32. This guy gets lost not because he was passive in the situation, because he chose the path that he took, right? And this is different. Coins are not inanimate objects. They are things. Sheep are animals. But this parable is dealing with a real live person. And that person becomes and goes astray of his own free will. And that is the distinctive difference between the first two and this one, the third one. This parable is probably the most popular, the most well-known parable that Jesus gave. The good parable, the Good Samaritan, might run at a close second, maybe not, but this one tops them all, it seems. So let's read our text, chapter 15, beginning in verse 11. Then Jesus said, a certain man had two sons, and the younger of them said to his father, Father, give me the portion of goods that falls to me. So he divided to them his livelihood. And not many days after, the younger son gathered all together, journeyed to a far country, and there wasted his possessions with prodigal living. But when he had spent all, there arose a severe famine in that land, and he began to be in want. Then he went and joined himself to a citizen of that country, and he sent him into the fields to feed swine. And he would gladly have filled his stomach with the pods that the swine ate, and no one gave him anything. But when he came to himself, he said, how many of my father's hired servants have bread enough and to spare, and I perish with hunger? I will arise and go to my father and will say to him, Father, I have sinned against heaven and before you, and I am no longer worthy to be called your son. Make me like one of your hired servants. And he arose and came to his father, but when he was still a great way off, his father saw him and had compassion and ran and fell on his neck and kissed him. And the son said to him, Father, I have sinned against heaven and in your sight, and am no longer worthy to be called your son. But the father said to his servants, Bring out the best robe and put it on him, and put a ring on his hand and sandals on his feet. And bring the fatted calf here and kill it, and let us eat and be merry. For this my son was dead and is alive again. He was lost and is found. And they began to be merry. Now his older son was in the field. As he came and drew near to the house, he heard music and dancing. So he called one of the servants and asked what these things meant. And he said to him, Your brother has come, and because he has received him safe and sound, your father has killed the fatted calf. But he was angry and would not go in. Therefore his father came out and pleaded with him. So he answered and said to his father, Lo, these many years I have been serving you, I've never transgressed your commandment at any time, and yet you never gave me a young goat that I might make merry with my friends. But as soon as this son of yours came, who has devoured your livelihood with harlots, you killed a fatted calf for him. And he said to him, Son, you are always with me, and all that I have is yours. It was right that we should make merry and be glad, for your brother was dead and is alive again, and was lost and is found. Remember, parables have one point. And the point of these three parables, including the one that we just read, is that there is rejoicing over one sinner who comes to Christ. But in this parable, 20 odd verses or so of it, there are many or some things that we can learn about life, about living, about being Christian parents, about being Christian single persons, about living life. And we're going to go through the parable and just look at some of these things. The first one is this, and I've got a little way to suggest these or to name them that may stick with you. The first one is this, 30 going on 13. This is the son, the prodigal son, and I'm calling him the self-centered son. The self-centered son. I don't know how old he was. He may not have been 30. Whatever how old he was, he acted about half his age. That's the way self-centered people act. I can look back on my life and see myself in this son in a lot of ways. Now, I've got two or three questions along the way that I want to ask. Here's the first one. Do you think the son's request, he goes to his father and says, Hey, give me what's going to come to me in the end, and I'll take my stuff and now. I'll take it now and be on my way. Do you think that request surprised the father? No. I doubt it. We don't know that, but I doubt if the father was at all surprised. Most of the time that you see this kind of attitude and this kind of self-centeredness in a child, it surprises no one. Everyone can see it. This young man had probably long ago established a pattern of living that was exposed himself as being self-centered. The work that he did in the field with his older brother, he probably half-heartedly did it. More than likely, his brother had to come behind him and clean up and finish the job right. Half-hearted work. He sloppily carried out any responsibility that was given to him. He never could take the initiative and do anything. He had to be asked or told to do anything productive around, we'll call it, the farm. They worked in fields, and this kid could not wait to get out. He was ready to go. This is all he thinks about, is pleasing himself. He doesn't care about what his lifestyle cost his father. He doesn't care what his lifestyle, how it affects his brother or anyone else. He's only thinking about pleasure for himself. And he comes to the father and he says, "Give me what's mine." As I thought of this, I was reminded of an event that happened in my own life. And I think I've told y'all this story before. It's not a story that puts me in a good light at all. But in hindsight, you'll probably find it funny. When I was 16 or 17 years old, my dad was a builder, and he was going broke. He was in debt and getting deeper in debt as time went on. And he was building us a house, which would have been ours until he sold it. And he worked long hours trying to get done what he could do, and it was just tough. And he had a son that didn't give a rip about helping him. I remember one time that I had a rational moment and volunteered to go back to work after supper and help him work. One time. In about a year's worth of opportunities. But this one particular day, he was roughing in the plumbing, and he told me to go with him. And he didn't ask me to go, he told me to go. Every teenage boy needs a father like my dad. I'm not sure about teenage girls, but teenage boys need one. So we went. And this was on a Saturday. It was right after lunch, or at least what happened was right after lunch. We was roughing in this plumbing, the water lines, this copper fittings. And he and me were cutting whatever, but and putting them together. And I was sanding the joints and fluxing them, sticking them together. And he was coming behind me, soldering. So we had our little routine going. But I didn't want to be there. I did not want to be working. And I wanted to make sure he knew that I didn't want to be there. So I was kind of slouching around, you know, how you do to make sure that you make your point. And yawning and doing this and doing that. And just making sure, just enough to make sure he knew I didn't like it. I didn't want to be there. So what if he's in debt? I wasn't thinking necessarily about that, but I sure wasn't thinking about helping him. I was thinking about going and having fun on this Saturday, do whatever I wanted to do. I wanted to make sure he knew I didn't appreciate him making me work. So I'm poking around and doing this. And directly, he asked me, he said, "Are you sleepy?" And I knew I'd overplayed my hand. I knew better than to lie. But the truth was, no, I wasn't sleepy. So I told him, no, I'm not sleepy. In a just the right kind of voice, you know, not rebellious sounding at all, you know, wanted to sound honest and sincere and all that. No, I'm not sleepy. And he said, yeah, you are. You're sleepy. This is on a Saturday, about 2 o'clock in the afternoon, sunshiny day in the summertime. I'm 16 or 17 years old. And he tells me, he said, you go home and go to bed. You're sleepy. You know what I did? I went home and got in bed. You wouldn't have dared do anything else but what he told me to do. Now that is stupid. It is childish. It is self-centered. To be that old and be that immature. To be that selfish. That self-centered. I could name you several things that weren't quite that dramatic in my life that showed my self-centeredness. I'm not so much different from this young man than I would like to think. I read this story, I think, what an idiot this guy is. He comes to his dad and says, I'm ready for my stuff. Give it to me. And I'll be on my way. Now, let's don't make everything, we know that the Father represents God and the Son represents the sinner, but everything about them doesn't, okay? Now, I would say to you, why this Father gave in and gave him his portion of the stuff, I'll never know. I wouldn't have done it, okay? But he did. And let's assume that he's going to give him his half and half. Now, maybe it wasn't. Maybe the older son's going to get two-thirds like the older son, you know, usually would get a larger portion. Maybe he's going to get two-thirds, the younger son one-third. But there's some way that is going to be divided up. And the father is willing to do that. Now, maybe the father is ready for him to go. Yeah. I wouldn't doubt that a bit. He's ready to go. You want to go? You think you know more than everybody else? Then go show us. Take off. This father, more than likely, I don't know if he had this kind of money on hand or not. I don't know how big a spread they had, how big a farm they had. They had servants. They worked themselves, apparently. But no matter how big it was, if it was valued at, let's say, in our day, $100,000, he's got to come up with, say, $50,000. Surely he doesn't have that much cash just laying around. Surely he's got to make arrangements or something to give this guy, the son, what he wants. But whatever the case is, he accomplishes it. And he gives the son what he had coming, what he was going to eventually inherit, and the son is on his way. The text tells us something interesting. He took all that he had. He took it all. You know, when most kids move out, they leave a few things behind. Because it's not the idea that they're never coming back. I mean, they're not never coming back to live, but, you know, they're getting started and they've got a house and they may not have a place to put everything. I know we've got army uniforms and stuff of Mark's that have been in our house for 20 years. He probably has little interest in them. I'm not sure if Susan would part with them. But there are things that occasionally I can look around and say, this is Mark's, this is Daniel's, and apparently they're content just to leave them there. But this guy takes it all. Makes me think he ain't planning on coming back. He has been looking for this day, and here it is. And he takes what he's got and he's gone. He doesn't go to town. He goes to a far country. He's getting away. Why he wants to get that far away, I don't know. Maybe he doesn't want word to get back is what he's doing. All right. But do you suppose that the father or the son or somebody may have asked him, what's your plan? What are you going to do with your inheritance? Do you have a plan? What do you think he would have said? Oh, yeah. Yeah, I've got a plan. And you can tell by the way he says he doesn't have a clue. He hadn't even thought about that before. Yeah, I've got a plan. I'm going to invest my money in this or that or, you know, something. Oh, yeah. You know he's not going to listen, so he's gone. And I doubt if he's planning on blowing all his money that quick. He's probably, you know, thinking a little bit, I might can do this with some of this money. But first, I'm going to take a break. I've been working hard in the fields, and I'm going to take a little break, have a little vacation, and just have a little bit of fun. And the next thing you know, he's gone. He is flat broke. I was looking for a verse in Proverbs, and I found it. And then I found about 10 other ones around it. I'm going to read a few of them to you. This is in Proverbs, I think it's chapter 15. Maybe it's 13. I thought I had that wrote down there. Proverbs chapter 15. My gracious, y'all see Proverbs written on that outline anywhere there? No? Anyway, the verse says this, that the way of the transgressor is hard. The way of the transgressor is hard. A person who behaves foolishly is going to have a rough life. A person who behaves unwisely is going to have a rough life. Row to hoe. And that proverb, that chapter in Proverbs tells us that a similar thing in a lot of different ways in there. Verse 12, a scoffer does not love one who corrects him. Is that true? A scoffer does not love one who corrects him, nor will he go to the wise. If he needs some advice, who's he going to go to? His friends. Somebody that's a yes man. Somebody's going to tell him how bad things are, how much he's been mistreated. Lots of verses in that. Verse 5, a fool despises his father's instruction, but he who receives correction is wise. In the house of the righteous there is much treasure. In the house of the righteous, there is much treasure. But in the revenue of the wicked is trouble. Everything that the transgressor, that the sinner, the rebel puts his hand to turns to trouble. It will turn around and bite you in the butt eventually. This young man has no plan to do. He just has money. And after a short period of time, he doesn't have that. Why is that the case? Because, and they've got this written on the outline somewhere there, because this guy has never mastered himself. He has never mastered himself. He has never become a disciplined person. That is why it is so, this is from my parenting book, I guess you might say. That's why it's so important to teach and to instill in your children a disciplined life when they are young. Because if they are disciplined when they're young, someday, somehow, they're going to have to be disciplined. And either they will discipline themselves or somebody else will discipline them for them. It may be an employer who disciplines an employee who is undisciplined. Somewhere along the way, discipline is going to come. And it's not going to be fun. It's not going to be easy. It's going to be a shock to their system. This young guy, he's broke. He can't find a job. The only thing he can find to do is to slop hogs. And that's not a particular job that I would want. But that's all he can find. In fact, he's almost willing to eat their food. This guy is far enough away from home that he can't just walk for 2 hours and get back there. He went to a far country, remember? And begins to think about, as he's slopping these hogs, thinking about his life. And the verses say he came to himself. Now that's a good thing to do, isn't it? To come to yourself. But in the final analysis, it's not a work that he did. God was gracious enough to this guy to give him a spirit of repentance and to open his eyes and show him just what's going on. Now, you'd think a fool could see what's going on, but sometimes we are so proud and so full of ourselves and so self-centered that we don't see it until it's way too late. But at any rate, God has opened this young man's eyes, and he understands and he sees his predicament. So, he comes up with a plan. What is his plan? He says, he came to himself, verse 17. Here's what he thought. How many of my father's hired servants have bread enough and to spare, and I perish with hunger? You know, back at home, my dad has hired servants. Now, a hired servant was a one step below a household slave, because a hired servant could be dismissed at any time, kind of like temporary help. He's got enough hired servants. They eat good. Here I am starving to death. Here's my plan. For the first time, he makes a plan. For the first time, he thinks through something about his life. I will arise and go to my father, and here's what I'll say. It's interesting that he seems to rehearse what he's going to tell his dad. That's probably a good idea too. Father, I have sinned against heaven. Notice this. I've sinned against heaven and against you. I'm no longer worthy to be called your son. Make me like one of your hired servants. This kid's begging. He's begging his father not to treat him like a son, but just treat me like a hired servant. That'll be a big step up from where I'm at. But he's hoping for acts of mercy on the part of his father. So, what if his plan was a little different? Let's tweak his plan just a little bit. What if he said, I'm in a rough spot here. I'm going to go back home, and I'm going to bargain with my dad. I'm going to say, Dad, I'm coming back home, and you can put the ring on my finger and the robe on my back, and I'll lay on the couch and eat grapes and play video games. But don't ask me to go to the field. No more field work for me. Think our story would have ended up like it did? I hope not. I hope not. We're going to talk about Father here in a little bit. But there comes a time where a parent has to give what is called tough love, where you've got to let them hit the bottom. That wasn't his plan, though, was it? His plan was to beg for mercy, to ask for mercy. Do you think, here's the question I've got there, do you think the father will recognize the new son when he sees him coming? Do you think there's something different? I'm not talking about recognizing from three blocks off. I'm talking about when he comes to him, do you think the father will see this guy's changed? He is different. He really gets it. I think so. I think that's why the father responded the way he did. Now here's a question for you, and you help me out here. This kid is self-centered. What is the cure for a self-centered life? Starvation? Hard times? Okay, y'all are thinking along a little different path than I am, but that's certainly part of it. Repentance? That would be a word that probably would encompass all of it, perhaps. What else? What's the cure for a self-centered life?
Give it time.
I heard somebody say something. Okay, having a servant's heart. Did you say something else? Somebody else? The Holy Spirit working in your heart, for sure. God's got to do the work. The evidences of what God's work looks like are some of these other things that we've named. What about just being grateful? Being grateful for everything that you have, even if it's pig's food. A heart that is filled with gratitude. This kid needs to get rid of you owe me mentality that he's got. Somebody owes me something. I'm the victim. I'm entitled to this. I deserve this. That's the cure for a self-centered life. Now let's go on to the next guy. This is the other son. This son I'm calling 40, going on 90. 40, going on 90. This is the enduring son. The enduring son. This son claims to have faithfully cared for his father's estate all his life. Now, perhaps he did. Perhaps his judgment of his own behavior is a little better than someone else's would judge it. But let's give him the benefit of the doubt. Let's say he did faithfully look after his father's estate. He said he obeyed him at all times. Let me find the verse there. He says, I have never transgressed your commandment at any time. Never transgressed. Whatever job you gave me to do, I went and did it. I've always done it. This older son has probably spent a significant portion of his time cleaning up baby brother's mess. Don't you imagine? Imagine so. And he's lived a life, and he is sick and tired of it. Now, I'm telling you, I know how this guy felt. Not because I have walked in his shoes. But I know how I would respond if I had. And I'd be sick of looking at him. I'd be sick of picking up after him. That's one problem that this guy has. His brother got X amount of inheritance, and he probably thinks that was too much. Because he's thinking, if I got back all the stuff that I did his part of, we wouldn't quite look like this when it's settled up. A few years ago, I made a suggestion in a sermon of how kids can get their parents to trust them, to believe that they are mature, like they claim to be mature. And here was my suggestion. I don't know if anybody took me up on it. I didn't hear if they did. But here's a family. They've got kids 10 years old or older. That's 10 years old or older, certainly big enough to do some stuff. Yeah. Okay? Even younger than 10. But they're earning a little money here and there, you know, from mowing yards or whatever they're doing. And so they've got a little spending money. Did it ever occur to you when you were that age? You know, my parents have a water bill every month. That water bill, our water bill is, I don't know, $50, $60 a month maybe. That's not much money, not if you've got a part-time job. Did it ever occur to you to say, Mom, Dad, I live here. I drink water. I use electricity. I like the heat and air too. I want to start paying the water bill every month. It's your own idea. Okay? What do you think would happen other than your parents croak for a little bit? All right? And I'm not talking about doing it 1 month. You know how long I'm talking about doing it? Ever how long you live there. Start pulling your weight. Because someday, you're going to have the whole ball of wax on your shoulders. You need to be pulling your weight now. There are some things that a kid ought to do just because he's there. It's not a paying job of yours to make your bed. You ought to do that anyway. It's not a paying job of yours to take out the trash or whatever. You live there. If you act like you're 30 or 40 years old, you might get treated like you're 30 or 40 years old. Thank you, Stephen. So here's my suggestion. And this don't just happen to be for kids. It can be for husband and wives as well. Fine.
You got their attention now.
Stephen and Charisse are paying attention. Find something that you can do to help somebody in your household and do it. And like it. Do it and enjoy it. Don't do it grudgingly. Do it and like doing it. I guarantee you, your life will be better off.
John, Susan is listening to
what you're saying. I know. She's up there, her eyes big. I remember one time when I did something like that for her. One time. There are some things she kind of typically does, but every once in a while she'll ask me to do. You know, would you feed the dog on your way out? You know, the trash, the dog food stuff's all outside. Would you feed the dog on your way out? You know, there's been a time or two I said, I already have. I've already taken care of that. Ain't that nice? Pat me on the back. But do something for somebody. Live your life helping other people. This older brother, I don't think was that way. He did his job, and he did it every day, and he did what he was supposed to do, but I bet you one thing, he only did what he was told. Never more. And he put in his time. He endured it. He's 40 years old, but he just wants to be 90. Sorry for the inferences here. He just wants to, I mean, his whole life is going to be this way. And here he comes in from the field one day, and he hears all this noise. A lot of music, a lot of, you could tell something supposedly joyous is going on. And he asks somebody, what's going on? They said, well, your brother came home. Your dad is having a big party. And immediately, he is angry. Because he's just been like a time bomb waiting to go off. And this is the last straw. And it sets him off. He's outside fuming, and his father knows that he's there. His father comes out and says, listen, come on in. Your brother is home. He didn't care if his brother was there or not. In fact, he would prefer his brother stayed away. Preferred if he never came back. And you remember what the father tells him? He says, listen, everything that I have is yours. Why is that? Because baby brother done spent it, his half. It's gone. The father is not given, it doesn't appear, baby brother half of what's left. His is gone. Is that the way it should be? Yes, yes sir. Yes. But if I'd been, this is where I'm telling you, I got the same problem this guy. If I had been him, I probably would have at least thought, if everything you've got left is mine, then you just killed my fatted calf and give it to that scoundrel. That's the way I think. Y'all probably don't think that way. But I would. So here, we've got this guy. What is the cure for this older brother's problems? What? Attitude?
Gratitude.
Gratitude. Somebody else said something?
Better personality.
How about repentance? I think if you think about them both, the cure for each brother's problems is exactly the same. Exactly the same. Now let's go to the father. I'm saying this, that the father is 90, going on 30. At least this day he is. Because this day, and I'm calling this the shameless humble father. The shameless, humble father. Do you think the father has forgotten his prodigal son? No. How often do you think he thinks about him? Every day. Every day. The father has exercised some tough love toward the son. The father seems to be willing to let his son hit bottom. This is what it's going to take. This is what it's going to take. He seems to be willing to risk never seeing his son again. But he does see. And it's not just seeing his son. that prompts this reaction, I don't believe. I think it is seeing what his son is like now. It is seeing the new son. Do you think the father, what if the father's wrong? What if the son hasn't changed? What if he's just coming back to get back in and to ask for more money? Or to refuse to go to the field or just behave just like he always did? What if the father is wrong? Should the father just have a wait and see approach to this thing? I don't know, but he doesn't, does he? He doesn't. He doesn't say, well, we'll see. You know, you can stay for a week or two, but we'll see what happens. We'll see how you act. We'll see if you've really changed. That's what I'd do. That's what I'd do. Because it doesn't take me long to get my feel of dealing with someone who walks all over you. When I've had enough, I've had enough. And you won't easily get back on my good side. That's not a virtue, by the way. But this father, is willing to risk being made a fool. He's willing to risk looking like a fool because of the change that he's seen or he thinks he's seen in his son. We're going to close with reading you a poem or a song, the lyrics to a song. Before I do that, I want to tell one more story. Years ago, in our church where Susan and I went to, there was a man there that some of you would know him. And him and his wife split up. They were divorced. I don't think they were divorced. They were split up. And his wife was sorry. I mean, I'm just telling you, she was sorry. And she left and carried with her their 3-year-old son. And he didn't have a clue where she was at. And he was beside himself, worried about his son. Because there was no telling what his son was being exposed to. And finally he finds her because she took a dog with them, and the dog got away and had a collar on it. The dog catcher in Colorado come up with the dog and called him because his name is on there, and he finds out where they're at. Somehow after that they end up, and somehow he ends up, I guess, being able to keep track of them. They're in California. And he talks to her, and she wants to come home. And he wants her to come home. Wants her to come home, bring their son, come home. She wants him to send her money for a bus ticket so she'd come home. He didn't have the money. In our church, this church voted on everything, even bus tickets. And the church voted to send her, wire her this money to, so she could come home. We did. She called Jim back after she got it. She said, thanks, I changed my mind. How do you think he felt? Embarrassed. Embarrassed, humiliated. Yeah. This is a song written by, I think the guy's name was Barry Hester. I'm not positive. It was recorded by Phillips, Craig, and Dean. And I want to tell you something about the song to start with. The song is, I had to listen to it two or three times, and I wasn't even trying to figure this out. But I thought, why is this song like this? And it's the first verse of the song is painting a picture to you of things you already know, but of the greatness of God. A God who has no needs. A God who is self-sufficient, who is able to do whatever he wants to do. Now listen to it. And then after that, he's going to contrast it with a God who is risking making himself vulnerable. Or at least that's the appearance it gives. Here's the verse. Almighty God, the great I am, immovable rock, omnipotent, powerful, awesome Lord, victorious warrior, commanding King of kings, mighty conqueror. And the only time, here starts the contrast, the only time I ever saw him run. Now what's going on? Here's a God who needs nothing. And yet, we see this God has a desire. A deep desire that prompts him to run. To lose his dignity as the God of the universe and pull up his skirts and run. You see the contrast. When I saw him run, this is the chorus, was when he ran to me. Took me in his arms, held my head to his chest, and said, "My sons, come home again." He lifted my face, wiped the tears from my eyes with forgiveness in his voice. He said, "Son, do you know that I still love you?" He says he caught me by surprise when God ran. He goes on, the day I left home, I knew I had broken his heart. And I wondered then if things could ever be the same. Then one night I remembered his love for me. And down that dusty road ahead, I could see. It was the only time I ever saw him run. And he ran to me, took me in his arms, held my head to his chest. He said, "My sons, come home again." Lifted my face, wiped the tears from my eyes. With forgiveness in his voice, he said, "Son, do you know I still love you?" He caught me by surprise. And he brought me to my knees when God ran. I saw him run to me. I was so ashamed, all alone and so far away. But now I know he's been waiting for this day. I saw him run to me. He took me in his arms, held my head to his chest. He said, "My sons, come home again." He lifted my face, wiped my tears from my eyes. With forgiveness in his voice, he said, "Son." He called me, "Son." He said, "Son, do you know that I still love you?" When he ran to me, I saw him run to me. I ran to him when God ran. Let's pray.